Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Ladies and gentlemen,
we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars for the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts. But we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From grandmothers who whispered in their baby girl ear, to fathers on dimly lit street corners instructing young soldiers to always keep their eyes open. You be queen. You were fire. You were passed through centuries on the hands of your daughters. They called you wisdom. Proverbs. On the backs of diamond-eyed schoolchildren who grew into hymnals recited by amethyst-holding urban philosophers who recited neighborhood commandments out of the windows of restored El Camino chariots to keep the warmth in their blood. Be wise. Be smart. Be black opal, brown quartz, bloodstone, and prayer. Be every form of gem. See, king told scribe, scribe told son, son told wife, wife told her daughter, and daughter told the ancestors, and the ancestors told me that you would come to give wisdom to thousands. They said you would come. Dropping gems.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of the Dropping Gems podcast. As always, I'm your host, Debbie Brown. I want to give a huge shout out to everybody that hits me up on Instagram after every episode. I love hearing from everybody, and I really appreciate you taking the time, whether it's a DM, a message, leaving a rating or review on iTunes. I'm just deeply, deeply grateful for your participation in this show as well. Especially for the ratings and reviews. So if you don't like the show, don't rate it. If you like it, go ahead and click on that 5-star joint. All right. So today we are on episode number 12. And as always, I'm joined by a special guest because that's kind of the concept of this show. Conscious conversations with familiar faces, primarily people that matter to me, that I have large, beautiful conversations with in regular everyday life. And we just take a moment to do it on purpose with a microphone. So without further ado, this episode, I am joined by one of the most hilarious, hardworking, cynical sometimes, generous, talented superstars in Los Angeles. And that is my dear, dear friend, DJ Head.
West Coast.
Welcome to the show.
I finally made it up here.
Oh, whatever.
You know, I finally been invited. You know, this is an elite class of human beings to touch this podcast. So,
well, I will say you're accurate on that.
Yes, I already know. I'm a fan.
But you are already, when I was like making my manifestation list of like all the people I want to have on season one for the show, of course you were in that list.
Yeah, and the name of the podcast came
from you.
From me.
Yes. So, oh my God, yes. So, DJ Head and our dear friend Chuck Dizzle, both incredible radio personalities and DJs and front runners on the LA hip hop scene for over a decade. They have an amazing podcast called The Homegrown Radio Podcast that I had the privilege to be a guest on a couple years ago. And I was talking to them about the fact that I was really procrastinating on dropping my own podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
And what really held me back from doing this podcast, and I think I might have mentioned this on Instagram before, but the first time I recorded an episode of what would be my podcast was like 4 or 5 years ago, and I never put it out. Mm-hmm. I'd actually started podcasting before there was even an iTunes podcast, like maybe 15 years ago,
yeah,
when there was just like the podcast network. But for whatever reason, I was completely paralyzed about starting the show because I couldn't think of a name for the show. And so much like I do, I overthought it, mm-hmm, and I just let it get me completely stuck. And yeah, I was on your guys' show and you're like, if you don't drop that goddamn podcast.
Yeah.
And you came up with the name Dropping Gems.
I just think that we get held up in like, just as creatives, right? We get caught up in our own mind like, oh, like Chuck is an overthinker. So I'm constantly on his ass about like, bro, just do it. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And you yourself as a creative, and you actually were ahead of the curve when it comes to digital content in general, because you've been doing content since before content was a thing.
It's true.
This is true. So
not to toot my own horn.
I think that we get in our minds and we be like, oh, I don't know, maybe the idea is too far-fetched for people to grasp. Mm. Maybe the concept is too all over the place. Maybe I haven't honed in on what exactly I want the subject matter to be.
Yeah.
I don't have a title. I don't have a videographer. Yeah. It's like, and me, I think that's my advantage over other people. I just don't care. Like, I just do it. And then mm-hmm, I think, like, I'll come up with a name. All right, that's the name. All right, I'm going for it. And boom. But I think that, like, the name of this is perfect because of, obviously, you're an author. You know,
well,
hello, yeah, your author, and then your book, and then your whole, like, actually to see your transformation. I know we're here to talk about me and shit, but your transformation is fucking crazy, to keep it real. And seeing where you are in the space that you are, I think the name is perfect.
Yeah, I'm really grateful to you guys for coming up with this name. Even though when you thought of it still took me an additional 2 years to actually use it.
Yeah.
But, you know, everybody's a work in progress. So DJ Head, he and I go, I mean, so far back. And probably out of all the guests that I've had on this show, I'm looking at a list right now. We have such a depth of history. And
it's ridiculous.
Probably the most, out of everyone I've had thus far, we probably have the most unique.
Yeah.
Like stories of origin.
So. Man. And I think that this is something too, but I mean, we're going to get into a whole bunch of different things, but, you know, for your listeners and people that follow you and stuff like that, I want them to know that, like, Dev is fucking, like, amazing. You know what I'm saying?
I'm not paying him to say this, y'all.
Like, no. This is free advertisement, but, but no, she's amazing. Like, I mean, we'll get into the stories and whatnot, but I think like it's a few people. I feel like it's you and then a couple other people that had literally changed my life.
Mm.
And I think that that's important for people to know.
I mean, I'm going to bring this back up to you because like you are incredibly successful, poppin', popular, rich. And so for you to say all those things about me, it's like, well, let me see. Let me hold five in the future.
Oh, no, you got that. So quick story. I remember a long time ago, I remember this had to be every bit of 10 years or more, or better. Probably more than 10 years.
Yeah, because we met, I mean, we probably started our friendship maybe 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Before really, like, I think I was like interning at the time in radio, but definitely before I had really any measure of success. And we were just like underground hip hop heads of Los Angeles.
We just loved this shit out here. And it was interesting though to see, because I remember when I first saw you, I think we were at like one of Mike Stroh's events.
Yeah.
Or we were somewhere and I saw you and you were like the only girl. And it was like, and you was just like, you was shooting this shit. You was talking shit. It was just like, and you was right there, but you wasn't, it wasn't like a, like she's the only girl. It was like, oh, that's the homie.
Yeah.
And it was just like, everybody just fuck with you and embrace you. I'm like, who in the fuck is she? Like, I need to know her because everybody loves her. You know what I'm saying? Like, you were already ingratiated, in my opinion, you were already ingratiated into the LA scene, and I was just trying to get my feet wet.
Wait, you know, my first real memory of you is Glasses Malone, one of both of our best friends, heavyweight in these Los Angeles streets, rapper. He most
antagonist.
Recently antagonist. Sometimes internet troll, but one of the best people I know, who you guys have probably heard of recently because he dropped a song that I very blissfully and beautifully cussed him out for, called Tupac Must Die.
Yeah.
So he's been doing a lot of press around that. But Glasses, you know, super close friend of both of us, but me and Glasses had got really close.
Yeah.
And I remember you guys had some kind of a studio or a building. I forget exactly where.
I think we had.
Was it in like Hawthorne, Lakewood?
We had, Bellflower.
Bellflower.
Yeah. That's fucked up. That's how old I am. I forgot about that shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. We were over there in Bellflower with Tommy. Shout out to them. And it was literally a makeshift studio. Like, it was some bullshit.
I remember he hit me up like, yo, Dev, I'm doing his voice. Dev, you got to come to the studio. And so I went up there, and that was the day that I met you. And I remember you walked in and you were like, your natural disposition is like kind of like an a-hole.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you're just like very blunt and matter of fact in the way that you speak. So you just walked in like, what up? Like, just very like... but we clicked immediately.
I just think authenticity attracts like you're an authentic person. I'm an authentic person. I understand now that I'm old and that I'm mature that my delivery is fucked up. I remember I did Sway and he called me out too. He's like, yo, you just say shit fucked up. And I was like, I know, and I'm it's a 10-year work in progress and I still haven't mastered it. But I remember when our first interactions, I liked you because I just felt like you understood me immediately. Like, it wasn't like, you obviously have your opinion about me. And it was like, oh, like, he might be an a-hole, whatever. But I felt like it wasn't like a judgmental thing.
No.
You've never been judgmental in general.
Oh, God, no. So. I'm the kind of person that I'm very drawn to polarizing people.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So, like, if someone were to point out someone to me, this has never happened with you, but if someone were to point out someone to me and be like, oh, my God, like, I just can't stand them or they're this, like, I'm drawn to know more about them.
Me too.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And on the flip side, if you hear something, like, incredible about someone, I'm drawn to them.
Yeah,
me too. And I want to know more about them and their life. But, yeah, so we, you know, you and I were truly in the trenches together.
It's truly.
And this was at a time where, you know, I was just getting my feet wet in radio. I had this, like, underground, like, internet radio show that I worked on called Zombie Radio with my dear friend Tony. And I was an intern at a station in LA.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, I remember I used to call you because at that time I was still a college student. And I had this opportunity to be an intern for two of my favorite personalities, the Goodfellas.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was trying to juggle having a full-time job, being a college student, and now this internship and this side hustle that I had, and I had totaled my car. So, like, I would, like, catch the bus for up to 4 hours a day,
mm-hmm.
To get home and to get to my internship. And, you know, I'm probably, for, like, a 2-year time span, I probably averaged at most 4 hours of sleep a night.
Yep.
But I really relied heavily, like, on people like you to, like, sit on the phone with me to keep me awake.
To keep you awake. Yep.
Because I would, like, it was so bad that I had started, like, hallucinating on the freeway. I would be so exhausted. It would be like 2 a.m. and I'd be trying to get home and then have enough time to, like, make it to school the next day, which was an hour drive. You know, it was just intense. But people like you, like, keeping me awake.
Yeah. I think what's crazy is too, is that we never realized how important those moments are. Because now I look back at shit like that, like, just different moments, like what you're talking about, like the just being on the phone and like being in the trenches. And it's like, and now I appreciate that way more than I did at the time. Because at the time we're like, we're young, we're hungry, we're trying to get on. We want, you want zombie radio to work. You like, I got all these ideas. You're trying to creatively express yourself, but at the same time, you got real life happening.
Yeah.
And it's like, I feel like that balance and that turmoil, because I know a lot of, I talk to kids now, I go to schools, and I have a lot of people that I mentor and shit, and I'm trying to get them to which they won't, but I'm trying to get them to cherish the grind of it more, because you later on, you look back like, damn.
Man. Oh, I miss those times, yo.
Yeah.
And it's funny because, like, you know, I think that is the area where a lot of, like, younger people, maybe like a decade younger than us, where unfortunately they don't take the time to savor it, because mm-hmm. they actually are documenting in real time in a way that we weren't,
we
right?
Couldn't,
like,
yeah.
I'd probably post, you know, a couple pictures on MySpace like a month, right? Yeah. But I wasn't documenting my journey in real time. Also, at that time, I felt very proud to be an intern. Like, yeah. I would be like, I would yell it off the rooftops, like, I'm an intern at this station. And yep. to me, it was the idea of paying my dues and, like, earning my stripes was really exciting to me, you know? Versus now, just because we're in such a comparative space and time, people feel like if they get an internship, they have to say, oh, I'm a senior assistant.
Yeah.
You know, instead of just being like, yo, like, kudos to you for prioritizing your dreams and doing the due diligence and the footwork necessary to get where you want to be.
Working your way up.
Yeah. But though, I mean, the times that we had were just, yeah, those were like truly special and just a very special moment in time.
I remember this is something, it's a couple of things like that is in our history in the last 15 years that I'll never forget. One of them is when you would literally risk your job, like, cause you were doing weekends on the radio.
Yes.
And I remember specifically I was just a radio baby, and I just love radio. Like, I just always wanted to do it. And that's why you always somebody I looked at like, fuck, I want to do what she's doing. Mm. And I would just always want to be around it. And I remember like always hitting you. I know I was bugging you, even though you probably don't look at it like that. Like, I'm for sure I was bugging the shit out of you. Like, yo, well, can I come be around? I just want to hang out. Like, can I come to the studio? Like, and it's like, it's kind of forward now that I'm looking at it, because people do that to me. Can I come to the radio station? Can I come sit in? Like, it's like, bro, it don't work like that. Like, you can't just pull up and I just have this random person in the studio.
In the studio.
Like, looking at all my confidential paperwork and you know, like, it's just
right.
That's not how this shit works. But you did it for me. Like, you would literally sneak me into the radio station and, you know, shout out to AD, but you would literally like sneak, like, I remember specifically the way the station was set up. We would go through the sales department because you didn't want me walking past certain offices of the executives. So we would go around the back and you would just be like, okay, just sit here in the corner and just, you know, shut up and just, and I would just be in there like eyes wide open, fucking giddy. And then one day I remember specifically you let me take a picture. And that shit just meant everything to me.
Oh,
and I was like, because you let me get behind the board. Yeah. I think nobody was at the station that day. I got behind I still have that picture, by the way.
Wow.
I got behind the board and you did like a little photo shoot. And I
remember this.
And it was just like, and that shit was like mind blowing to me. Like, and this had to be, I don't even know what year that was, but
it's probably like 2007-ish. Yeah.
And I just remember that shit meant everything to me, because it was like, damn, I'm in a radio station. I'm right I got the mic in front of me. I'm just, I don't know what none of this shit does on this board, but I got my hand on it and you were taking the pictures of me. And that just gave me, I think that what that did was like revitalize my passion. That like I really wanted to do this shit for real. Like, I don't want to like fake do it. I don't want to pose for the pictures from MySpace. Like, I really want to do this shit. And that, to me, I feel like those little things that people do changes your life.
Mm.
And I felt like that was one of those pivotal moments in my life, at least doing this business or wanting to do this business, where it felt like it was possible.
Mm. That's dope. And that, I think that speaks a lot to who you are in this moment, even that you know, experience that moment in the way that you just described, because at this point, to flash forward from 07 to now, it's 2019, like, you have the number one rated night show in Los Angeles.
That's crazy. Every time I hear that shit's crazy to me.
Like, how wild is that? Like, you have the number one rated night show in Los Angeles, the number two market in the country,
yeah,
on the biggest station in the number two market.
Yeah. I don't know.
Wow.
I don't know.
And that's really just even the tip of the iceberg, because it's like you have this huge career in radio. You're celebrated and recognized by people all over the country, but you also do so much more. You have a new TV show coming out on Netflix.
It's not my TV show, but
you're one of the stars of the show.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So, what's interesting is, so shout out to Netflix, first of all. Second of all, shout out to Jesse Collins. His whole team is amazing. This is something I'll just sidebar. What I want to point out, because I'm doing the Dropping Gems podcast, I want to point out that Jesse Collins' team is what makes his fucking ship stay afloat. Mm. And it's ran by women.
Hey.
And I think that's the key to his success.
Mm.
And I was just like,
I love that you recognize that.
I do.
Yeah.
I peeped it. And I was like, okay, I know what I need to do. You know what I'm saying? Anyway, long story short, shout out to Jesse Collins Entertainment. Amazing man of color. Whole bunch of people of color he employs. I think that his production company does everything you would think of in black television, from Kevin Hart, Real Husbands of Hollywood, to wow, producing the live BET show, award show. Like, he does everything in between. Mm. So anything that you've probably seen that's black on television, Jesse Collins probably does it. So long story short, actually, I got a shout out to Dave Free. Shout out to Dave Free, because I got a random text. You know, Dave is real weird and elusive. I don't know if people know Dave.
Elusive.
He's very elusive.
he's very mysterious.
He is.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
One day I'm laying in the bed and Dave texts me like, yo, I'm gonna hook you up with my boy Jesse. He has an opportunity for you. I'm like, all right, for sure. Mm. I don't know what it is. He said, this is my new number. Don't give it out. That's just Dave, right? In and out. So I end up jumping on the phone with Jesse Collins. At the time, I had no idea who Jesse Collins was. And then I ended up telling my manager, Silas, he was like, yo, like, you know who you were talking to? And I'm like, nah. He was like, bro, he's like the guy. Like, he's the Doc Winter of black television.
Mm.
So I'm like, okay. So long story short, he's like, yeah, you know, we're doing this show. I don't know if you heard about it with Cardi B and T.I. and Chance the Rapper. It's going to be a big show, first of its kind, hip hop competition show. And I'm like, and the first thing I thought was, it has to be authentic.
Mm.
It can't be American. Now, no disrespect, but it can't be corny. It can't be, you know, weird. And I just didn't, because that's not the culture. The culture is raw. It's authentic. I don't want the curse words bleeped. I don't want, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And they were like, so when I met with Jesse Collins at his office, we sat down with the whole team. They laid it all out for me. And they were open to feedback. They were like, well, we understand you have a voice in this city. We understand who you are and stuff. So this is not just the show. You're a part of it. If you have an opinion, let us know. We'll, you know, take it into consideration, whatever. And that wasn't the most important thing to me, being involved with the show to the level that I'm involved. And once they brought me on to be quote unquote, the DJ, right? I'm the DJ on the show, but I would be live interacting with the contestants. So I'm like playing the music that they're rapping over and shit. Mm. It's not like playback. That's why I said authenticity. It has to be real.
Yeah.
So when you see me DJing, I'm actually DJing. And they're rapping as I'm scratching. The whole shit is authentic. So then once they saw how good I was with the microphone, I'm like, I talk every day for a living. Give me a microphone.
Right.
So then once they were comfortable with that, they were like, oh, okay, well, you're pretty much going to be directing traffic now. So then that's how I became more involved with the show. And it's kind of like, it's just a blessing, wow, to be honest with you. Like, and what I do want to say, though, about the show is when you watch it, it's very, very authentic. The cursing, the arguments, everything is real. It's the judges and the producer. I mean, I'm not the judges. It's the judges. It's Cardi B, T.I. and Chance the Rapper. They literally control the destiny of the show. There's no producers. There's no networks involved. There's none of that. I have a headset on that I'm listening to the production. And as Cardi B is saying something, they're making changes on the fly. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's that authentic, wow, to the point where no one knows what's going to happen until it's actually happening in real time.
Mm.
And that's what made the show fucking dope to me. And I was like, I'm in. Let's do this shit. And so it's coming out October 8th. I don't know when it's going to come out, but October 9th. Sorry. I don't know that there's ever been a show like this. Like, full uncensored, raw, uncut, unfiltered opinions. And it was just,
and also like the credibility factor of the people involved on the show, like their credibility to the culture, like what they have to say matters, what you have to say matters.
Yeah. And I think that, just, I want to be more involved in shit like this. That's impactful to the culture.
Yeah.
As a whole, not just, oh, he's a DJ. Even to this day, I don't really DJ clubs. I don't DJ at strip clubs. No disrespect to that, but that's just not what I want to do right now. Like, I feel like I have a voice and it needs to be heard. And I feel like I could just do more with my platform.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think too, it's like the way your DJ ability has really crafted your life. It's the way it's like cultivated your ear. It's the way that it's like allowed you to become such a big gatekeeper in Los Angeles and such a curator of the culture out here.
Yeah, I think Sway used that word too. He called me a gatekeeper. That shit was crazy. I ain't gonna lie. I know Sway's a friend of yours and like, I was, but it's still like, as a radio baby, like I'm a fucking radio baby.
Well, Sway's a national treasure. Like he is legitimately like, he's a treasure.
But you know what's crazy? And I was talking about this shit last week, I think.
Can I just point out that you are cussing so much like you don't work in radio?
I know. Radio people are the worst. I'm sorry. What's crazy is I was talking about this last week. The people that I look up to, right, in radio, because I'm a radio baby, are my peers. And it's the wildest thing I've ever had to come to grips with in my life because, like, you know, I'm just talking to Big Boy and I'm just, Angie Martinez is giving me advice. And, you know, like, she comes in the room. It's like, hey, what's up, bro? Like, you know, and I'm like, bro, you're Angie Martinez.
Right.
Like you're a legend. Like I look up to, I listened, I got your book. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yo, her book is incredible. Fire. Wow.
Angie Martinez and Charlamagne have the best books from personalities that I've ever encountered in my life. They literally cultivated different pieces of my life.
Yeah.
Just those books alone.
You should read, and I'm like, you know, she's polarizing, but I read one of her books when I was still an intern and it was Wendy's Got the Heat. Mm-hmm. Incredible read about radio. Incredible. Incredible.
Okay. I'll check that out. Right now, though, what it was interesting enough is being in media and podcasting, I don't have the attention span to read books.
Yeah.
So I listen to audiobooks. And so that's how I just consume because I can drive and I can zone out and listen to it. I don't really listen to a lot of music while I'm driving. So I listen to a lot of podcasts and audiobooks. So hopefully there's an audiobook for that one. But I think that's the biggest thing, like mind trick ever, is once you get to us, you'll just like, I'm pretty sure it happened to you at some point, you'll just look up and be like, oh, like I'm where I've always wanted to be.
Yeah.
I'm a peer to the people that I looked up to and grew up listening to. And they look at me as an equal. And it's just crazy because you're not ready for it when it happens. Like people tell me like, oh, you have a voice and this and that. And like, okay, I'm starting to really understand it because my opinions are getting me in trouble. And so I'm like, oh, like you care what I think. And that is the biggest trick that you're not ready for because no one ever prepared. It's like parenthood. I relate to parenthood. Like, cause a lot of my friends say, you're never ready to have kids.
Yeah.
You figure it out.
Yeah.
So that's how I look at this. It's right. I look at this like you're never ready for what, when it actually comes, you just figure it out on the fly.
Yeah.
And so I feel like that's the transition I'm going through right now is to understand who I am as who I am to other people.
Like the weight of the responsibility.
Right.
Yeah. Cause that's the thing that a lot of people don't realize when they're just chasing like attention or getting recognition. Yeah. It's like to have eyes on you is a sacred responsibility.
Yeah,
to have people listening to you. Like I think the radio is such a sacred medium to me because somebody is literally letting me inside of their brain. Like I'm entering through your ear. Mm-hmm. You're not distracted by visuals and I'm just sitting on top of your brain, you know? And so I think like, I love that. I love that you just said that because That's why a lot of people think, oh, I want fame, I want attention, I want a lot of followers. And then you get those things and you feel empty or you don't know what to do with it because you didn't think past getting people to notice you exist.
Exactly.
And there's a responsibility with that. Like you, like, what are you offering? What are you sharing? What are you leading with? Like everyone wants to be an influencer, but what exactly are you influencing?
Yeah.
Is it impactful for the betterment of people?
And I think that's where I am right now. Like for the most part, I always wanted to just make a difference. And I wanted to be what I didn't have. Right.
Yeah.
So not going deep into like, oh, I didn't have a dad and like all that stereotypical stuff. It had to do with mentorship or people that embrace you, that you can actually physically touch. There, you got to think about it. When we were coming up, let's say, I don't know, 10, 12 years ago, you were probably the only radio personality that I had access to. Mm. Think about it. I didn't know anybody else. There was,
especially at that time,
there was no social media.
Nobody was really in the streets.
Nobody was around.
Yeah. Nobody was around.
Nobody was around except Dev. You know what I'm saying?
I was at everything.
You were everything. The bottom everything. Basement thing in Long Beach, the things at CSUN, you were everywhere. And that's where I got that from. Like I got part of that from watching you, watching how Glasses moved once mm-hmm. he became the guy in the city, watching how once that whole scene was bubbling, I watched how everybody moved. And then I also watched how people embraced those different entities. And I was like, I don't ever want to be the person that's in seclusion. I don't ever want to be the person that's out of reach, out of touch.
Yeah.
I don't ever want to be I want to be what I didn't have, which is somebody who has the, like we were all learning at the same time, mm-hmm. right? We all had to learn by making mistakes. I want to prevent that for the next people, for the next individual. So that's why I do go talk to kids. I have people that I mentor, and that's why I go out of my way to like, there probably isn't, I don't know, if you're a rapper on the come up right now in LA and you have somewhat of a buzz or you taking yourself seriously, you probably have my cell phone number. There's very few rappers in LA that don't have my cell phone number. And that's just because I'll hit them up. I'll go out of my way to be like, yo, hey, this young kid that I just found online. I didn't even know him from what. And he's from here. And he was like, I followed him back. And he was like, yo, this is crazy. And I DM him. I said, what's your cell? And I just called him. Mm. And it blew his mind, right? Blew his mind. He's like, yo, I'm like, yeah. So this is what I want to tell you. You know, this is what I peeped your whole rollout on your music. I peeped what you're doing. I looked at your artwork. I said, stop posting guns. Stop posting money. Don't do this. Take all that stuff down. Do this. Do that. And it's just nobody did that for us, in my opinion.
Yeah.
As a week, I don't know your story, but my story, like in being in the circle that I was in, nobody did that for us.
Yeah.
Nobody told us how to prevent I'm trying to save someone 10 years that no one saved me.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I didn't even get high. I went to radio broadcasting school at Cerritos College in 2004, right? I got hired in 2015. Mm. So I'm trying to.
11 years.
11 years. Yeah. It took me to get hired.
God, can we?
And that's part time.
Yeah.
That's not like a contract. That's not money. That's literally, hey, we're going to give you 2 hours a week.
Wow.
That's what it took me 11 years to get 2 hours a week on the radio. You see what I'm saying?
And then it's so interesting. And I want to sit here for a second because that's something that I really wanted to share about your story. And what I love so much about your journey is like the patience, the patience that you sometimes have to have with your destiny.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because especially in this day and age, which is very much a day and age where everybody thinks that what they do has to be so grandiose. Like everything is this grand gesture. Everything has to be not just documentable, but captioned in a way that's celebratory and captioned in a way that sets you at an elevated stance, you know? And for you, it's like you are standing in your destiny right now from that 2017 2 hour hire. Now it's 2019 and you are the number one rated night show. So not only are you.
No, 2015 I got hired.
2015.
Yeah.
At 2 hours. Now it's 2019. You have a number one rated night show along with Boulay Kev, yeah, and you are celebrated in Los Angeles. You know, you're a real power player in this city and a power player in hip hop. You have a Netflix TV show, Rhythm and Flow. You have taken over the BET stage, curated it and hosted it for the past few years. Yeah. You're going to be a big part of this Hip Hop Awards coming up. And so it's like, it's crazy because you wait over a decade. Mm-hmm. You wait, right? But in that wait, you're not sitting around bitter. You're not sitting around complaining or watching other people with envious eyes. Like, you are playing your position in that moment. You're cultivating skills. You're getting prepared for whatever is meant to come. Mm-hmm. And then in God's time, in the exact right timing for your destiny, you know, shoot forward. You get something that's headed in the right direction, but not fully what you want or maybe have worked for.
Yeah.
But you still stay focused. And then all of a sudden, this rapid ascension within a 2-year time span, this rapid ascension. And now you're like standing in the fullness of everything that you work towards.
Well, something that like a mentor of mine told me is that during a dark time. It was like right before I got hired at iHeart. It was like, because you got to think, if you're grinding, if you're like literally poor, right? So I grew up, I have the same upbringing as most people of color in the city, right? We're poor on welfare, blah, 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 right? So when you have that, I don't feel like everything else is take home. Mm. Like I've already been at the bottom. So everything else outside of me eating noodles and, you know, oatmeal every day, because it's just what we had, up to, I don't know, couch hopping or sleeping in a car or whatever the case may be, that's all house money. So right now, I'm living in the whipped cream of life. that's what the homie called. He's like, you're living in the whipped cream of life, because everything that happens is take home. It's all house money, because not that I don't feel like I don't deserve it, but I didn't have it anyway.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
And so now, like you said, rapid ascension, I look at it like I'm making up for lost time.
Mm.
And the plan, what you said about the waiting period, I think it's like when it's dedication, hard work plus patience, that's the formula.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And I feel like if you follow that formula in anything, it could be a relationship. It could be your relationship with God. It could be your relationship with your spouse. It could be your mom, whatever the case may be. Anytime, dedication, hard work, patience, that's the formula. That's the recipe to whatever long lasting success may look like in whatever venue that you're looking for. Right. So in my mind, what I'm looking at right now is it's been, I don't know what, 15 years or something crazy like that. I'm looking at it like, for the 10 years that there was a void, I'm trying to make up for that, which is what hinders me from appreciating the now.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So now I'm like
present.
It's very difficult for me to be present, because I'm always like, what's next? What's next? What can we do? And it's like, at some point, like my manager had to look at me. He's like, bro, it's like, you got the number one night show in the city. You have two shows, actually. You have your show Monday through Friday with Kev. You got Homegrown Radio, which is a whole nother beast, on Saturday with Chuck. You got a Netflix television show. You got your own BET stage. You're doing something else on television. I'm doing local news, Fox and KTL. He's like, what else do you want?
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know. It's just not enough. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's incredibly ungrateful of me to feel like that.
No, but I'm going to say I'm grateful. I think you just spent 10 years training yourself to approach what you do in a certain kind of way that you haven't necessarily adjusted for what life currently looks like.
Yeah, I have not. And I'm not, I don't necessarily want to, because I feel like complacency builds. I feel like complacency works to your detriment.
But that's not complacency. There's like a difference. Like, complacency is kind of like consciously keeping yourself stuck.
Mm-hmm.
But being present is much more just about kind of surrendering to the flow of life and not being like rigid and just being fully involved in the here and now and standing like in gratitude and, you know, just not holding back, but not pushing forward.
Yeah. What I do is I try to do, and I posted this, I think last week or the week before, where I have one mirror in my house. It's like, obviously I live in a little apartment, but I have one mirror in my apartment, right? Outside of the bathroom, everybody has a bathroom mirror, but I have one mirror in my apartment and it's literally right by my door. And so what I posted was most people look in the mirror to check their outfit, not their soul. And so what I do is I look in the mirror every day and I don't look for, oh, do my shoes go with this? I'm looking at it like, do I like what I see? Not on the exterior, on the interior. Do I like who I am? Do I like what I stand for? Do I like what I believe in? Do I like my values? Do I like where I am mentally? Do I like my happiness?
Are you in alignment?
Right.
Yeah.
And so I check myself daily and that's what keeps me present. Because I have to be honest. I mean, if anybody can be humbled, but if it takes a different type of person to humble yourself.
Yes. Oh my God.
And yeah. I feel like
write that down.
I feel like that key thing right there, humbling thyself, is that's everything. And so once somebody is able to do that and become their own checks and balances. I mean, anybody can be humble. You go read your YouTube comments, that'll humble you real fast. You know what I'm saying? You go read your SoundCloud comments, that'll humble you real fast. But outside of that, checking yourself is key to prosperity, in my opinion.
Self-honesty is one of the most difficult but powerful and freeing things you can ever do for yourself, you know, because most people lie to themselves the most, more than they lie to any other person. They lie to themselves every second of every day. So to be able to really look yourself in the mirror and be like, am I who I say I am? You know, am I who I say I am?
Yeah.
I think, and I've shared this, like, I think a couple episodes ago, but one of the greatest, like, I don't want to call this a hack because there is no easy way to be on the journey, but one of the most kind of simple but powerful tools is to say every day on purpose, you know, God, please show me the truth of who I am.
Yeah.
Because in multiple ways, I mean, that can be kind of like, you can dive into the meaning of whatever that is for you. And so there's so many different perspectives for what that statement even means, but it will all bring you to the most authentic version of yourself saying that. But yeah, I love that.
I think that's the most important thing to me and where I am now. And then what I've noticed is that's where I've always been, but that's also what took me so long. Is being true to myself, being authentic to myself.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now, Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I remember having a conversation with an intern, and they were like, why do you help us so much? Like, they were questioning my intentions. Like, because it was like, because like, I've literally like done things, and I'm going to talk about something that you did too that changed my life. But I remember doing things for certain people, and it, you know, you don't have to get into the particulars, but like, it would be big things. Like, someone didn't have shoes.
Oh, wow.
Like, she needed shoes. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so like, I bought her two pairs of shoes, and then like, feeding them on a day, like, or even like helping them with rent, you know, shit like that. And it was just like, it's not about, to me, it's not about, oh, I want to do this because it makes me feel good. It's because I respect your commitment.
Yes. Yeah.
I respect how much you're committed to doing this.
You're still showing up. Yeah.
You're still going to show up. I can't say enough about Lupe. Lupe Llerenas, she started working with us as an intern, and she looks up to you like you're like a god to her.
Oh, stop. That's too far.
I'm telling you. So long story short, she would go through the most shit, and I don't want to like put her risk, but like, her dad got deported.
Oh my God.
Literally, which is a struggle to all, you know, Latino.
Yeah,
Latina,
that's
people,
a
that
real issue.
It's a real
that we
issue
are facing
here, especially here in LA, because we're both from here. But
God,
she still came to the station and was blogging and like,
wow,
doing social media. And I'm like, bro, like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Because I could tell someone's bothering her. And then she was like, yeah. And then when we didn't find out till after the fact, and we found out, and we were like, what are you doing? Like, what? She's like, well, I'm still going to come. I'm like, it's okay. Like, go be with your family, like deal with that. But that level of dedication,
man, I have so much respect
for hard work, patience. It's the same thing. That level of dedication, it reminds me of us.
Yeah.
You on the bus 4 hours.
Yes.
Me, like, I remember every struggle.
Yeah.
I remember.
And I have such a low tolerance for people that like complain about petty things.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, you have a right to your process and a right to your perspective, but I'm not going to indulge you. Like, I'm not going to coddle you. Like, if this is your dream, or if this is something that's important to you, it's no one's job but yours.
Yeah.
To find a way to make it happen, you know, because things are, you know, I've had different interns over the years that I have to take blame in enabling them, because like, when I first like really got on in my field, I was like, I want to help everybody for the help I didn't have.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? And so specifically with women, because like, I never had a woman really like take me under their wing, or
correct,
have, you know, mentor me. Like, I had a lot of amazing men in my corner in radio. But so anytime somebody will write me, starting way back when they'd send me messages on MySpace to, you know, hitting me up on Twitter or whatever, showing up at my event, I would always try to like find them an internship somewhere, or get them involved somewhere.
Yeah.
And a couple people I would take under my wing. And, you know, I thought I saw some of myself in them, but very early on, it was a slap in the face. Mm-hmm. Like, you'd get people complaining about the silliest things, or not doing whatever was needed to get the job done, but expecting so much in return. And I'm like, I can't keep, they'll figure it out. What's meant for them is for them, but I only have enough bandwidth to supply the people that are, number one, really invested in themselves and not just looking for someone to make things happen for them for the gram. But also, like, there is a level of reciprocity that is necessary, even in a mentorship.
I agree.
Like, you have to give something back. It, even if all you have to give is gratitude or your hard work, but you have to, no relationship can sustain or exist if it's one person facilitating and the other person just taking. And that's super true for mentorships too. And for, you know, assistants, and for anybody that is taken under any kind of wing by another person, like, even if you don't have the same connections, money, or value, what you perceive to be value that you're bringing to the table, you do have something to offer.
Yeah.
And so you need to give as well, you know?
I look at, something I always tell my mentees and kids and students when I go to schools, I say, look, look at the world and the universe like a store, right? You can't just walk into a store and just take stuff. That's not how it works.
Right.
You have to provide some sort of monetary compensation, currency, work for hire, whatever the case may be.
Right.
That's how the world works. If you need something, you have to be willing to give something. That's how fasting works if you were spiritual or whatever the case may be, right? So it's like, if you're looking to only pillage the resources or leech off stuff, or I'm only looking to gain, what are you willing to give up?
Exactly.
And that's the thing.
There always has to be a trade with the universe.
And
the universe always requires some sacrifice.
Something.
Yeah.
And so I remember early on in about 2011, Silas, my manager, was like, look, he was like, you basically don't have anything. Like, cause I'm at this time, I'm at my mom's house. I'm in a room downstairs. I'm broke. I don't have nothing going on except like rap stuff with G&M stuff. But I was bottomed out, right? So he was like, well, you know everybody, right? I'm like, okay, cool. He's like, that's your currency. Mm. That's your currency is the fact that you have relationships in the city. I said, yeah, but I don't have anywhere to get there. I can't even afford. There's no Uber at this time, just for the millennials listening. Like, there's no Lyft. There's no Uber. So I can't get on the bus at 2 o'clock at 12 o'clock at night to be in an event.
Right.
It's just not safe where I'm coming from. So he's like, all right, well, I have a car. I have gas. You're the currency. You can get us in. So that became our system. Mm. So all I had to do then was provide means to get in, which means I had to cultivate and curate my relationships, which means I had to stay socially connected, which means I had to come out of my comfort zone and give something. You have to give something to get. And it's just, that's how it works. I remember being 27 years old, and it was one of the most humbling things in my whole career. I don't even think you know about this, but I remember being 27 years old, and I would take donuts to Rick D's studio just so I could be in the room with Tattoo with them while they were doing their show. And it was just like, and I would be in there, and there are people on air who were, I don't know, 21. Like there was a 19 year old there, and I'm bringing donuts just so I can like get in. And I was like, and then later on, like Silas would tell me, he said, look, it's two things that everyone universally wants and needs. Two things, and they'll fuck with you. You put money in their pocket or food in their stomach.
That's real.
It's the realest advice.
That is so real.
I ever give to young people is, you put food in my stomach or money in my pocket, I'm fucking with you.
Yeah.
Off top.
Yeah.
And that's the Trojan horse. I said, listen, you want to get in the radio station? I said, you showing up with your air check, cool. You might get in the lobby. You showing up with this, with your resume. I mean, you might get upstairs, maybe.
Right.
I said, you know, but who's
that's
always,
like what everybody else is doing.
You know who's always going to get buzzed in? The person carrying the big takeout box with the Chinese food in it. Hey, let her in. Who's she here to see?
Yo.
Right?
Yeah, that's so true.
Let her in. I don't care who she here to see.
Yeah. What you got in that box? Yeah,
what you got in that box? Oh, I got extras. You got extras?
Here, take a seat. Come on.
Yeah. And so I was like, bro, that's the key. And so I remember doing these things. I was taking breakfast up there just so I could be in the room. And that's our metaphor. That's our mantra to this day. Just get in the room.
Yeah. Yep.
Get in the room. That's what you did. You were making copies, getting coffee.
Yeah.
Like whatever.
Yeah.
But you needed to get in the room.
It's so funny you say that because it just reminded me of something. Now, I didn't do this all the time because I couldn't. But I remember like when I first got my radio internship, like I had nothing. Like I had no money. I was a sad little college student. Hey. I did have like this dope part-time job. Working for this like billionaire randomly doing like concierge, like ordering his lunch and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But you know, what I was spending on gas and all of that, like I had nada. But I remember like just to like impress the people I was interning for, I would hit them like on my way and I'd be like, hey, are you guys hungry? And I would stop and I would buy them tacos from this taco shop up the street from the studio off of Wilshire and La Brea. And I would come and they'd be like, Dad,
yep.
Yo. And then they would shout me out on the air. They'd be like, all right, coming up next. And, you know, our girl, Debbie Dev, man, she feeding us. We in here enjoying these tacos. And then, like, my name would start getting used more and more on air. And then that would turn into them being like, yo, Deb, what's going on? You heard any crazy stories lately? And then I would start doing, like, little gossip segments. And, you know, that turned into to what was called the Dirt with Debbie Dev that I did. Yep. At a time when it was really hard to find gossip. But yeah, like it's funny because, and I remember I would stop and I would get them tacos and I would not have enough to get myself a taco.
Correct.
Right? Like I wouldn't have enough money to actually feed myself. So I'd be walking in there hungry, but with bags of tacos where every person in the studio, it was the DJ and then the two guys, Romeo and DJ, who I'm forever grateful to that. And they would get like two tacos each. And I'd be like, oh, thank God.
Yeah. And I think that it's that type of stuff that people overlook because they're not looking for reciprocity. They're looking to get. They're not looking like, how can I bring value? The key to my success, I always tell people, obviously, is dedication, hard work, patience. But it is literally bringing value.
Yeah.
I try to bring more value to people than they can offer me.
Yeah.
And that way,
powerful.
You're always in. It's just credit. It's karma credit.
Yeah. Right?
And I build my karma credit daily. We call it doing the extra credit and me and my team, right? We do extra credit every day. If you're doing extra credit every time you turn in an assignment, you can never fail a class. Right?
Yeah.
So that's how I look at life at this point. Every day I get up and it's like, okay, what else can I do? All right, I'll randomly, and I know it seems random too to some like artists and producers and DJs. I'll just randomly go through my DMs and pick a DJ like that hit me up and I'll just hit him up and be like, yo, you know, I'll call him because you can call through Instagram now. So I'll call him and just be like, it blows their whole entire world, right? Because I'll be sitting in the station. And they're like, oh, yo, you're at work? I'm like, yeah, what's up? Like, I seen you ask me for some advice. I got 5-10 minutes. What's up? And it's just like that kind of.
You're so dope.
That wasn't available
to
me.
That's incredible.
That was not available to me.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm talking about. And that's so bringing it full circle to my quote unquote purpose is I feel like that's what I'm chasing at this point. I'm chasing my purpose. And I feel like that's stronger than any and everything. That's stronger than big. That's bigger than a company that I work for. That's bigger than any and everything that can possibly keep me from maximizing my full potential is once you chase purpose. I was just talking to this guy on Instagram Live the other day. I think I posted a video and I was trying to explain to him. I'm trying to put together a book right now.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'll explain to you the concept after this, but I was explaining to him, he was like, well, I just want to make money in the industry. And I said, that's not it. You're never going to win like that because you'll constantly be chasing a bag and not chasing opportunities. Mm. And he was like, okay, well, so what should I be doing? So I kind of broke it down for him. Like, you need to chase purpose because when you chase purpose, the universe backs you up.
Mm.
It's like when artists are trying to do shit independently, and they're like, I can't get my music off the ground. It's not working yet because you don't have a machine like a label. So all the label is the universe. And once you have a label behind you, once you have the universe behind you, it becomes easier to accomplish things. So that's how I look at purpose. When you're chasing your purpose, the universe is like, I fully endorse this.
Mm.
And it becomes easier and easier and easier and easier. Yeah. And then
especially when you're doing it with a pure heart, because that's
intention.
The thing. It's like, you know, a lot of people right now put purpose side inside with like recognition and validation and being celebrated. But it's like when it's like the purest part of your heart, what you're after. Yeah, that's
I remember
good.
I remember a conversation with Nipsey, and it was one of the conversation we had in the studio. I think I talked about this before, but I told him the truth about himself and it was an uncomfortable conversation.
Mm.
It was real uncomfortable because I dug in his ass, though. I was like, bro, like you need to, you're literally, your brand, your name is bigger than your records. And that's a good problem to have because most people get overshadowed by their records.
Yeah.
Most people like the Panda record, don't know who did the Panda record.
Yeah.
I said, but your brand is so big that your records are sitting under your brand.
Mm.
All you need is to contribute and participate in the industry just a little bit. Give us a commercially viable song that we can all celebrate and play at the same time.
Yeah.
And then everything else will become easier for you. And that was the nice version. That's the pleasant version of the conversation,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
It was uncomfortable. It was really uncomfortable because I was telling him some stuff he probably knew that was the truth, but never really acknowledged to himself.
Yeah.
And I was just doing, I was grandstanding that day because I was so frustrated the fact that how amazingly talented you are and the world hasn't seen it yet.
Yeah.
And that's because the vehicle for the world to see musicians is a record.
Yeah.
Is a song, is their art. And you haven't provided the art to the masses to where everybody can put a light on you and appreciate who you are in totality.
Yeah.
And so he walked out the studio. He walked out the studio and it was just like an awkward, like it was an awkward energy. So I was like, so me and Silas were about to leave. And then as I was leaving, he was standing by the door. He pulled me aside. He was like, hey, you know what, Head? Like, he was like, he said, you know why niggas fuck with you? And I was like, honestly, I don't know. He said, you say crazy shit to niggas. I ain't gonna front. He's like, you be saying some wild shit to niggas, Head. He's like, but your intentions are pure. Mm. And that's why I fuck with you, because your intentions are pure. And I was like, damn, I appreciate that. He's like, 100. I was like, all right, for sure. And then that was it. And then he put one song on the album because of that conversation.
Wow.
And it was just like, that to me meant a lot.
Yeah.
Because not because it was Nip, but it was like finally that someone can see past my delivery. Because my delivery's not good. I understand that. But someone can see past my delivery.
Your intentions are pure.
But my intent is not to diss you. My intent is not to like talk shit to you, for lack of a better term. But my intent is just to, I'm trying to get you to understand what I'm saying. And my delivery is bad. But
not bad, different.
It could be worked on. Because I'm just so passionate about it.
Yeah.
And so I just deliver it as is. And part of it is passion. And part of it is my lack of care for raw emotion, I guess, because I'm not the biggest emotional person, right? So, and I think that comes from a childhood. But then Silas told me one day, he was like, I saw you go downtown and buy your mom perfume that she wanted for Christmas and gave it to her for Christmas in the same bag you bought it in, the little black downtown alley bag. And then he was like, that's when I knew you were different. And I was like, yeah. And I said, because to me, and I just talked about this on air, I think, like earlier last week or earlier this week, where it was like, I don't care about the rapping. I care about the gift. That's the truth.
Are y'all writing this down?
I don't. I could, if someone brings me some food, I give a damn what bag is in
or
what plate it come on. If I'm hungry, I'm gonna eat the food. That comes from how I grew up.
Yeah.
I grew up in a survivalist mentality. My mom would come home and be like, hey, I don't get paid for another week. Take all her food out of the refrigerator, put it in the freezer. Here goes some candles. The power about to get cut off.
Oh my
there was no like, oh, like, baby, this. It was just everything was solution, problem solving.
Yeah.
Boom, boom, boom. Right. I remember like, oh, I don't have her car would break down. Right. I don't have a car right now. So we got to get up an hour early. We're going to take the bus and do, do, do. It was no like, there was no bereavement or no.
Yeah.
There was just like problem solving. That's literally how my mind works to this day. And so people who don't know me or haven't taken the opportunity or the time to get to know why I function the way I function automatically just assume I'm an asshole.
Yeah.
And so it's like, it's not that. It's just literally I don't take time to process the emotion behind stuff. I'm just in problem solving mode.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm a Capricorn. I'm an alpha. I'm trying to fix shit. So I'm not really tripping off of the nuance of how we're feeling about the actual problem. I'm trying to fix the problem.
Yeah.
And so that's obviously wreaked havoc in my personal life, but benefited me tremendously in my professional life because I don't take anything personal. You see what I'm saying?
We're so similar because I mean, I'm a highly emotional person, but not for myself. I'm mostly like, if somebody else needs something, I will find a way to make it happen. Or if I see somebody else crying, I will cry. But I don't cry about myself. I don't cry about like my own hardships because I'm very like solution based as well. And it's like, I've even had someone say to me, like, you know, like your tone of voice, like you're always so stern. And, you know, they took it as like I was speaking down on them or like I was like in an authoritative position. And I'm like, no, that's not my intention at all. But I just like to be very like literal, especially if we are in like a moment that needs it. Like if we're in a moment that it's like, listen, we can't get bogged down by semantics. We can't get bogged down by emotion. Like we have to move. We have to act. You know, that's very much how I am. And it's funny that you talked about your childhood, because just in the last month, I ended up having one of the biggest breakthroughs of my life about why I operate in the way that I do. And it's like, you know, this is work that I had been doing, obviously, for the last 10 plus years. You know what I mean? Like work on self, work on working through past traumas. Like I have a childhood that includes some abandonment. I have a childhood that includes some emotional isolation. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people in my life, like part of my identity has really become my strength, my resilience, right? Like a lot of people that are close to me that like know me intimately view me as being a very, very strong, solution-based, like proactive person. And I am all those things. I am a deeply resilient person. And I like that quality about myself. It's become very like intrinsic with my identity. But a new breakthrough to my healing. And this is what I thought was so dope, because sometimes you think you've done the work, right? And you think, God, why am I still tripping off this? I've already worked through that. I know why I do that. I know what it comes from. I've healed that. And someone said recently to me, Ron Holnick said, you've healed the part that you healed. To me, that was one of the biggest breakthroughs. You've healed the part that you've healed. Mm. And there's celebration in that. And because of what you've healed, you're at this moment where now you can go a little deeper into whatever that trauma was. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So all the it's consistent
like,
work.
Like, yeah, it's consistent work that you're never quite done with, because there's layers to it. So even though I had thought I had done all this work on my, you know, on my feelings of abandonment or emotional isolation, and I had done a tremendous amount of work, now because of that work, there's another new layer to unlock me that I have the opportunity to investigate. So what came to me was to go back to like my identity being found in my resilience and in my strength. What I realized was, and this was so humbling for me, something that was such a big part of my identity was actually rooted in being a coping mechanism. Mm. My strength was a coping mechanism. I had started inadvertently and subconsciously to equate my self-worth with how much pain I could tolerate.
Whoa, that's deep.
Deep.
That's deep.
Deep. It was mind-blowing to me to come to that level of self-awareness.
How'd you get there?
Just in the last month. You know, it's so crazy. I think because I had done so much work up until that point, so much work on healing and, you know, years of personal growth, it really came to me like a flash of lightning in an instant. And it wasn't painful to come to that recognition. It came to me like God whispered it in my ear. And just in a millisecond moment, it's like I had read 10,000 books that had led me to that point. And it was the most beautiful thing to me, because I felt like, wow, to get to that piece, how lucky am I to have unlocked that? Something that I used to consider painful and maybe would have spent a lifetime avoiding looking at. But how beautiful and breathtaking that I get to lean into this, recognize this in myself, and heal it and be done with it. And
that's
deep. Have a new layer of freedom.
How much pain you could tolerate. That's deep.
Yeah. And
that's
you know
some,
what?
That's some sick shit, low key.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That's crazy.
And it's like it was really a coping mechanism for me, because when I was dealing with different emotionally painful things as a young person that I didn't know how to interpret and I didn't know how to survive, all I could focus on was being strong, not succumbing to emotions, not breaking down. I'm going to take a sip of water. And so that amount of strength ended up defining what the rest of my life looked like and was beneficial to me and was beneficial to other people, but its root was still based in trauma, you know? So to uncover that, it's just like, you know, I'm not going to necessarily change overnight or heal it overnight, but I can observe it in myself now and know why my reaction is what it is, and then offer myself permission to choose a different reaction.
Yeah.
Like maybe now I do have permission to be very emotional about myself if I want to be.
It's an option.
Yeah, it's an option.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just, I was blown away by that new insight into myself. And it also really excited me because I thought, dang, like, if I'm lucky, life is long and I have so much more opportunity to grow and investigate and refine and sharpen myself.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's a journey. That's crazy, though. That's crazy you had that breakthrough. I remember, you know what's dope is when you have those, though, nobody could tell you nothing.
Nothing. Yo, I was like, and I already thought, like, as a soul, I was the shit.
Yeah.
Like, I know that sounds very egoic.
Nah.
I already think I'm hot shit.
Yeah.
Like, I love myself deeply. But I walked out of there and I was like, for days, I was just like, yo, you killing life. Like,
No, I know. That's what I'm telling you. Like every day when I look in the mirror, I look for those gems. I'd be like looking at it like, okay, what else can I do? How else can I be? Can I be of service? How else can I, not even just for other people? How can I be of service to myself?
Yeah.
Speaking of which, this I do want to talk about. So, I remember. Damn, this had to be every bit of 2000, maybe 2008 ish, and I remember you were doing your thing. You were already like Dev in the city, you were Dev. And I think, were you music director at the time?
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, so you were like popping.
And I was like 24 then.
Right.
Like,
and so like you were popping, and I always looked up to you, and I was just like, damn, like, which is interesting because I think we're like the same age, or I'm actually older than you, but I always looked up to you and I was like, damn, like, she got her shit together, this and that. And there, this opportunity came up. Now, backstory, I'm still broke. I don't have nothing really going on, not really making money like that. I had just got fired from my job at AAA and I went all in on this entertainment thing. So when I got fired everybody had jobs and stuff. So when I had worked at AAA and they fired me, and I remember how I felt.
Mm.
And I felt like empty, but I felt worse than empty because it's like, damn, I can't even do this right.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? And I just remember, but I remember knowing, this is before content creator was a thing. I remember like, I'm better than this. And I know what my purpose is. I know what my passion is. And I want to go all in on this. And so I remember specifically when they fired me, I was like, I never want to feel this way again. I never want to be like dependent on someone else's brand to define my career. And I was like, it's all or nothing from here on out. And this was in 2007, I think, when I got fired from AAA. And that literally was the last job I had until I got hired at iHeart in 2015.
Wow.
I was just in the streets for 8 years, just figuring it out, not doing anything illegal, but just doing like email blasts and DJing that's why I know everybody in the streets. I done DJed in everybody's hood in LA, you know what I'm saying? But long story short, I remember when they fired me, they walk you out to your car, the whole production, right? I'm 20 something. Like, you don't need to walk me to my car. You know what I'm saying?
Right,
I'm not going to tear nothing up on my way. So they're walking to me, my car, they give me my final check. And I'm just sitting in my truck like, damn, I got fired. I got to go tell my mom I got fired from my job. And I was like, you know what? That's when I decided I'm never going to do this again. This is never going to happen. I'm either going to be successful or I'm going to be a bum sleeping on my mom's couch at 50 years old.
Ooh,
like
big extreme.
That's what, well, I have uncles. I'll leave it there. So anyway, you know what I'm saying? So I remember specifically, I took my last check, I cashed it, and I took the homies to Red Lobster.
Wow.
And they were like, what are you?
Cheddar Bay biscuits.
What are we doing? I said, we're celebrating. They were like, what do you mean we're celebrating? You just got fired. I said, we're celebrating the end of Aaron Drake. We're celebrating the end of me doing this and pretending I'm not supposed to be great.
Ooh.
Like this is over. I'm supposed to be great. And that's what we're celebrating today. We're celebrating all or nothing.
Oh.
And they were like, all right, cool. I spent my last check at Red Lobster with the homies, just breaking bread. Like I took it, like the person who got me that job, I took her and then like my homies and stuff. And long story short, I didn't have nothing for 8 years, right? But I remember specifically this opportunity came up where I was supposed to go to Vegas with Glasses and somebody else, and my phone was off. And I think me and you were talking over GChat on Google chat or something like that.
It was probably AIM.
We were talking on AIM.
Debbie Dev LA. That was my old AIM name on my Sidekick.
We were talking on AIM. And I was like, we were talking and I was just like, I was bummed out about something. And you were like, you know, what's going on? I'm like, I want to go to Vegas to network for this opportunity. I don't remember what it was. I think it was radio. I think it was something else, a gig or something. And I was supposed to go, but I couldn't afford to go. And it was just because I had no income. Like, you know what I'm saying? I'm literally just a bum at this point. And I was like,
stop calling my friend a bum.
Well, I literally had no means to take care of myself.
So
I remember specifically telling you about what was going on. You had to drag it out of me because I wouldn't tell you. You drug it out of me. And then we were talking. I think we jumped on my house phone. Like my mom had a phone and we jumped. You were at the station, I believe. And we were on the house phone and I was telling you about what was going on. It was just all bad. And then you were like, well, you know, you need to have your phone on if nothing else. This is something that I still carry to this day that I tell interns and I tell kids. I said, pay your cell phone bill first. And you told me that in 2008, I believe this was, you were like, your cell phone is the most important bill you have as an adult, because especially as someone who's trying to be an entrepreneur and be in this business, is that's your lifeline. Mm-hmm. Without your phone on, no one can contact you for more work.
Yeah.
And you can't reach out to other people for more work. Pay your phone bill. And I said, I can't. Right. And my phone bill, I believe, was like $100 it was like $80. I didn't have $80 to pay my cell phone bill. And you was like, well, how much is the bill? I told you it was like $80. And then you were like, okay, give me your account number. And I'm like, nah, I can't do that. Then we had another argument. And then I was like, I can't do that. And you know, why? And so we ended up getting to the root of it. My account was overdrafted like $200. And so long story short, you was like, bro, give me the account number. It's like, just give me the account number, right? And I was like, so we got another argument. And then, long story short, you gave me I gave you my account number, and then you hit me back like a little while later. You said, hey, check your account, pay your cell phone bill. I never want to talk about this again. And I was like, what the? So I checked my account, and you put $300 in my account. And that right there, that was like, man, I will kill a nigga for Debbie. And it was just like, but you got to think, like, I'm like 25, or I don't know how old I was at the time. Yeah, something like that. And it's just like, no, I was younger than that. We were younger. Damn, how old are we? I don't remember. It was 2007, probably, I think this was.
Yeah.
And when you did that, that's another thing that changed my life, because it was like, damn, there are people like this, you know what I'm saying? Because I was out on my ass. Like I was like, there are people. So there are people that exist that give a fuck.
Oh wow.
You know what I'm saying? Because I didn't know. Like I didn't not necessarily outside, not necessarily people, because obviously I have family members.
Yeah.
But people who don't have to give a fuck.
Oh.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that to me was like one of the key things, that a pivotal moment in my life, where it's like, you need to be this person to other people. You need to always remember this moment and duplicate and regurgitate this moment over and over and over and over and over, because this is going to provide hope for people that don't believe that there's hope.
Mm.
And so I was like, okay. So when I paid myself on bill, went on a trip or whatever. And then I finally, like, I believe it was like, might be 4 years ago now, when I finally got my job at iHeart and stuff like that. I think I got you an opening and plane ticket or something was it your birthday?
Yeah, that's like the best, like one of the best gifts I've ever gotten. Like,
because you were flying back and forth.
Yeah, I was flying a lot then, and it was like, it an open-ended plane ticket that I recently used, and it had like a note from you, and I was like, oh my God.
Because I remember that, and that was well over 10 years ago.
It really means a lot to me. Number one, that, I mean, you know, your karmic understanding of like paying that forward, because like, that's what it means, you know, it's like, I've had similar moments in my life, which probably shaped my ability to want to do that for you.
Exactly.
You know, it's like knowing that you can be safe, knowing that, like you said, there are people outside of your family that do care, that your life matters,
yep,
that your destiny matters, and if someone can play a part in it, you know? And I remember I told you, let's never talk about this again. And we did not ever speak about
it. You didn't
that.
Even remember it.
Yeah, you brought it up when I was on your podcast 2 years ago.
You literally did not even remember doing that, something that changed my life. And I was like, and so I was like, I wonder what that's like. Like, I want.
And keep in mind, I mean, this is when I, like, it's not like I had a lot of money. Like, I was making minimum wage at the radio station, but for whatever reason, because of side gigs, at that moment in time, I had that $300 spare and it wouldn't have put me on the streets.
Yeah.
But I was not rolling in money by any means. It wasn't like, oh, $300. No, it was like, oof, $300. But it wasn't a $300 that was going to make or break me that month.
Yeah.
I had it to share, you know?
And I feel like that's important. So going back to what I was saying earlier about when the interns asked me, why do I do things for them? I said, because somebody did this for me.
Yeah.
And I was like, I want you to do the same thing. I said, you're not always going to be hungry and not know how you're going to pay your phone bill. You're not always going to not have shoes. But I want you to remember this moment because, like Tiffany Haddish, throw the rope back.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
That's all I want you to do.
Yeah.
I don't want nothing in return. I'm never going to tell anybody about this. I don't want you to think like this is a safe space. But I want you to remember these moments because you're not always going to be in this situation.
Yeah.
There's going to be a time when somebody else is in need and I want you to throw the rope back.
Yeah.
And so like.
You gotta promise me to stop telling this story though.
Okay.
Because when I said, we'll never talk about
this again. It's important for people. I don't tell the story to revitalize the story. I tell the story because it literally shaped part of my life.
And it like, you don't even understand, like that means the world to me, Head, because I just so deeply admire and treasure the person that you are and what you do for people and what you provide for people. So for you to even share with me that I played any role whatsoever in who you've become and what you've done is like a true pleasure, a true gift, you know, and I'm grateful. I'm grateful that God even put us on the same path together to mean something to each other and to aid each other. Cause I mean, you've helped me tremendously over the years. Like there have been times where you've helped me, you know, literally like I was helping someone in my family that needed to move really quickly.
Yeah.
And I
forgot about that.
Was call you and you showed up that day and for hours and at that time I didn't have anything extra to probably even get y'all lunch. But I remember you and Glasses showed up and moved someone that meant the world to me, that means the world to me, like moved them for hours lifting really heavy stuff, you know? And so like time and time again. Yeah. But it's like, you know what it was too in the moment, like when we were on the phone and that happened and I said, listen, it's done. Let's never talk about this again. Like it was important to me for two reasons, because I felt like one, whenever you have the opportunity to do anything big or small for another person, like I didn't want it hanging over your head. Mm-hmm. I didn't want you to feel like you owed me anything. I definitely wasn't going to be like, oh, you know what I did for him? I helped him so much recently. Like, you know, it wasn't for that. So I didn't want you to feel like I had something over you or like you had to, I didn't want you to pay me back. I didn't want you to feel like anything was over your head or you were in any way indebted, because it would have changed the structure of our relationship if that had happened.
Mm-hmm.
But also like, I didn't want people asking me for nothing.
Facts.
So I was like,
tell people
that I can help them.
I got that. While we talking about this, I want to bring this up too. I was talking to Charlamagne, right? And me and you both tap in like, yo, like, what do you think? Or
we talk at least once a week.
Yeah. We respect his mind or whatever. So we'll just jump on the phone. I hit him. I was like, yo, like, cause I'm going to read this post to you. I said, I'm not going to lie. The bigger my platform gets and the more people I help, the more I resent people with bigger platforms who do nothing.
Yeah.
And so I posted that because that's how I was feeling, right? And so I hit Charla and I was like, yo, like, do you ever feel like this? Mm. And he was like, all the time. And I was like, okay, so I'm not crazy.
Yeah.
And he was like, nah, it's the truth. I'm like, okay, for sure. Because I'm just like, I look at the minuscule role that I might play in different people's lives or influence that I might have or a platform that I might have. I don't look at like how you say, oh, you got the show and this and that. I don't look at myself that way. Our perception of self is always different than others. So I'm looking at it like, what more can I do with the little bit of that I do have? Like with the $300 that you did have at that time, what else can I do to help someone else that might need it at the time? Or what else can, not monetary, just advice.
Yeah.
So give me some game, you know, inspire somebody, whatever the case.
Do and what you can with what you have.
Your resources that are available. So I was looking, and so that's the conversation I had with him. And I was just like, because he does so much for so many people that people don't even know that he does. And I'd be like, he has to share this feeling that I have, because I'll be looking around and the big homies always told me, never count another man's pockets. Don't count other people's pockets, because then you'll always be in competition with other people as opposed to bettering yourself. Mm. And so I was like, damn, if I have this platform and I can help this many people and you have that platform, how many people could you be helping that you're not? And so now I'm naturally resentful towards people who I shouldn't even care what they're doing. But the more people I help and the more people I see they're in need of inspiration, of just self-worth.
Yes.
And it's just like so many things like that, that bothers me when I see selfishness displayed or when I see extreme vanity or different things and different people.
You despise vanity and conceit. I have never met someone like this will be. So me and Head probably talk on the phone once a week, I would say at least, like, and we'll just like, whenever we get a free chance in the car, like we'll just like shoot the shit or whatever.
Catch
like,
up.
Yeah. Like, okay, we got 20 minutes on this drive. And I remember we were talking a couple weeks ago and you had brought up somebody that you were just like, you know, I just don't think that they have like the work ethic that it takes for like what their position requires. Correct. And I'm like, well, what is it really, you know, what is it really about this person that just like gets under your skin? And you're like, have you seen how many selfies they have on Instagram?
It literally bothers me.
I fell out laughing. You're like, you could see the conceit right there. Do you see how many selfies are on their page every day?
It literally bothers me because what I'm looking at, again, like I said, I'm doing 10 years of makeup work. So I'm looking at, you got this platform and you have this access that people would literally die for.
Yeah.
Like, imagine you being when you first started interning for Romeo and DJ, and they were like, hey, you know, we're going to put you on full time contract. Da-da-da-da-da. You're going to be da-da-da-da. Like, that would have meant everything to you.
Yes.
Right?
Facts.
When I got my position, that shit meant I'm gonna tell you some shit I've never told anyone. I was actually saving it for my book. The last time I cried, well, no, Nipsey passed was the last time I cried. But the first time I cried in years was when I got my contract at iHeart, right? So I'm gonna tell you the truth. This is a real story. Nobody's ever. I never even told Chuck this shit, right? So I'm literally sitting on the toilet, taking my morning throne, you know. And I'm looking at
I really didn't want to visualize that.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. And I'm looking at my phone and it said, and I got an email from Doc Winter. He's like, hey, Head, here's your contract. Look over it. You know, congratulations. Let me know. And I read my contract and it was like, iHeartMedia wants blah, 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 blah. DJ Head full time. Da, 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 da. Here's your pay. Here's your benefit thing. Here's your bonus scale. And I just start tearing up. And I was like, oh shit. Like, this is what it means to feel something. Cause I don't know what that's like on a regular basis. Cause I'm just not invested like that in my feelings. And I was like, damn. And what it was, I think it was just the validation of the 15 years.
Yeah.
Or I'm sorry, the, what is it? I don't know, 11 years.
10,000 hours. And, yeah.
11 years. It was just a validation of 11 years where I couldn't get in the building. Mm. 11 years it took me to get in the building in that way. And it was just like, damn.
Yeah.
And so that meant more to me than actually signing it and, you know, doing all the hoopla and announcement, all that, just to get the offer.
Yeah.
And it was like, for me, it was one of those things where, like you said, where you rediscover who you are. And it helped me to rediscover who I am, what my purpose is. It revitalized that when you was taking pictures of me in the studio. Because of that, obviously, it diminishes over time, right? Yeah. So as it kept diminishing over time, that re-kicked it in. Mm. And so when I take those two moments, you taking pictures of me, make-believing, right, in front of the board, in front of the mic, me getting a contract to offer me a full-time radio position in my hometown, and then I look at other people who have platforms who take it for granted.
Yeah.
It literally infuriates me.
Yeah.
I get so fucking mad. I'm sorry to curse, but I get so mad and I just be like, bro, like, do you know what this would mean to somebody else?
Yeah.
And you take it for granted. So it's not necessarily the vanity, it's the entitlement that I have a problem with. Yeah. And I look at vanity as another sense of entitlement, and I hate entitlement. I hate entitlement on every level. Mm-hmm. I don't like that people are entitled to anything and everything in life, because life owes you nothing. Mm. And I've been there. I've been there multiple times. I literally remember my mom asking people to let us spend the night. Like, and I was 7.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying? I was 5. Like, I literally remember my mom standing there like, yeah, you know, just, we need a couple of days. I remember that shit. And so that, when I take all of that, right? And then I couple it up, and then I look at somebody who's completely entitled and completely privileged in every way. And it's just like I could really cuss you the fuck out right now. You know what I'm saying? Like,
well, especially because, and it's like, we all have like our spiritual curriculum and whatever arrives us to the path that we're at. But it's like, I can definitely feel you when it's like you are observing someone exist with no gratitude.
Correct.
For the moment.
Correct.
You know, like, because I think that's really what it is too. And it's like, when you have the chance to have a big platform or live a big life, you know, you can move out of the space of feeling like you're lucky to be there. Like, you don't have to like minimize yourself because you're in the room and constantly be in a state of, oh, thank you, thank you. But you should always, in whatever you're doing, have an overall gratitude for being able to be who you are in that moment and live life in the way that you're living it, you know?
I think the moments like that too, like even when last year I got my mom a house, and that was like a goal that I always had, like, I mean, it's not paid off and shit, but we were able to.
No, that's a big deal.
But that to me was like, I won.
Especially because you chose to get her a house before you got yourself a house.
I still live in a studio apartment that's no bigger than, you know, I think my studio apartment is 530 square feet or something like that. Maybe 600, if that. Total. Kitchen, bathroom.
Wow.
Right. So still right now to this day. And I think that was just, for me, that's been a goal that I've had since we've been on welfare. And I remember my mom giving, because I used to stay with, you know, my white, I call it my white family. I used to stay with them. My mom would give them food stamps because I would stay there at their house. And so my mom would give them food stamps, like, to make up for food that I was eating at the house, whatever, because they would let me stay so that way I can go to school in a better area than where I grew up at. I mean, than where I was living. And so my mom would give her food stamps. And then, I remember the struggle of it. And I was just like, my mom has never owned anything. Mm. You know what I'm saying? And it was just like, that's what I wanted. That's been a goal for 30 years. I'm 35 now. So I don't know, 20 years, that's been a goal of mine. Like, I want to buy my mom a house, something that's ours. Right. That she never has to worry about them kicking us out again. She never has to worry about somebody changing their mind. Oh, you can't stay here anymore. Like, this is yours. Mm. And so that's what, when I finally was able to do that, and we took a picture in front of the house, and it was like, okay, I won. Mm. I could lose everything right now, and I feel like I won. I won. I beat you. Like, that's how I feel. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? They could fire me from my job, take me off of TV. everything. I could lose everything and I can go right down, right over there where she lives and get a job at Walmart. And I feel like I won.
Yeah.
Because we have something that we didn't have when I started. Mm. And so now that's the level of gratitude I want people to have.
Yeah.
And they just don't share that. And that infuriates me. You know what I'm saying? That literally bothers me. So that's kind of like where I'd be coming from with that.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to stop letting it bother you. Because everything is perfectly designed, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Everything is perfectly designed. And I think you being exactly who you are and the way that you are, you're always just going to be leaps and bounds ahead. And the quality of life that you live will speak for itself, mm-hmm. you know?
That makes sense. I think another thing, too, that's big, that I'm big on at this point is manifestation. And that kind of a gripe that I used to have coming to grips with where we are spiritually at this mm-hmm. point and tuned, like you said, you love yourself. That's yeah. something that's lacking in our community.
Yeah.
And I feel like, but I never even heard the word manifestation until I was an adult. Mm-hmm. I never even knew what a law of attraction was until I was a full blown adult, because that's not prevalent in our community.
Right.
No one's teaching these things. No one's talking about it. It's just about survive, survive, survive. And so now that I have this opportunity to like delve into spirituality and growth and doing the work on yourself and all this other kind of stuff, it's like, damn, I'm kind of resentful to the fact that that's not available to me where I'm. So now that's another engine in my back to like get this message out to people that look like me and look like us and come from where we come from, to tell them the truth. And the truth is, this stuff is real. You know, self-worth is a thing.
Yeah.
If you don't value yourself, you're never going to be anything, because that's what it starts with. Manifestation is a real thing. And so those are the types of things that I'm trying to like, that's like my underlining agenda.
Yeah.
And so it's an analogy we use in the music, in the music industry, me and the homies, is like, I don't care why you come in the room. If you come in the room because I'm playing your favorite record, cool. If you listen to me on the radio and you think I'm funny, cool. If you like the witty jokes I get off on Instagram, and that's why you fuck with me, cool. If you like if you like the television stuff that I do, cool. Come in the room. And once I got you in the room, I'm going to say something real.
Mm.
I'm going to provide you with something that you can leave with and better yourself with.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like the get in the room method that I'm using, that's the undertone of my agenda, basically.
I love that. It's really the Oprah effect.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. And I mean, what you just described is exactly like why I feel I was led to like start Karma Bliss and just even do this podcast, you know, because I realized like the lessons, the gems, you know, they're not to be hoarded. Your testimony isn't to be hoarded, not to just keep under wraps for yourself. Like you have to share.
Mm-hmm.
And that completes the circle. Like if you are gifted in this life to become self-aware, to heal yourself, to figure out who you are, to accept who you are,
mm-hmm.
it is part of your destiny to also share that with other people. You have to complete your life circle.
Yeah.
You don't just get to keep it for yourself and reap all the benefits, you know?
I think last thing too is being able to accept the blessings is a that's something that I've worked on. And I just took I'm 35. I took my first vacation ever last year, this year. I went to Anguilla with Charlamagne, right? That's literally I've never taken a vacation in my life.
Wow.
And I was just like, it was way more expensive than, I'm not rich. So
Anguilla is so expensive, by the way.
Every plate is $40 to
Yo.
Eat. Like, anyway, long story short, it was just like, it ate me up, right? Cause I'm not balling. I got a regular job. Like, I'm not a celebrity. I'm not none of that. So it's just like, but Charlamagne been trying to get me to do it for a couple of years. Like, I'm telling you, my brother, you gotta go. Da, 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 da. You gotta do it. You gotta feel that shit. You gotta.
The waters of Anguilla are healing.
Yeah. All of that, right? He could write the marketing campaign for them. So I finally was like, all right, I'm gonna do it no matter what it costs. And that took a lot out of me, not only financially, but it took a lot out of me mentally, because every dollar I spend makes sense in my mind. I don't spend money at all on nothing. I don't buy clothes. I don't buy stuff. I'm not a consumer, because I'm always in survival mode going back to my childhood. So I think that's a big part of it too. Once you get to a place where there are blessings, you have to be willing to accept the blessings. Yeah. And
and that's probably like what this next leg of your journey is.
Yeah.
It's like deprogramming, unlearning all the ways in which you used to see yourself, see money, see emotions. You know, it's kind of doing the dance of just slowly unbraiding things that don't serve you anymore.
Yep. Nah, for 100%. I think that's the truth.
We got to get out of here.
Okay.
I love you to the moon and back. You are one of my favorite humans. I'm just really,
you know, I feel the same way
that you're in my life. And I just completely celebrate you. I'm amazed and in full admiration and awe of all that you have become and all that you are becoming and continue to do. And you're just a light, man. And you're so supremely talented and you're so respected and so beloved. And you do so much for so many people. And
thank you.
I'm just grateful for your life.
Thank you. Same for you. You know, I feel the same way. I love you too.
Are you sharing emotion right now?
I mean, it's a thought with emotion attached to it.
Make sure you check him out. His new show is on Netflix, Rhythm and Flow. He has the number one night show in Los Angeles on Real 92.3 with Bootleg Kev. So make sure you check them out. And his Instagram is hilarious. So follow
very,
him.
Very, very adult friendly content.
At DJ Head. Head is spelled H-E-D.
Yes.
DJ Head. All right. Till next time, y'all. Peace. Big thank you for listening to this episode of the Dropping Gems podcast. This show is executive produced by Adrian Scott and me, Debbie Brown. Our theme music was created by producer Day One, and the poem that you heard at the beginning of the show, well, that was created especially for us by award-winning poet Nnamdi Okafor. If you have a quick moment right now, please hit subscribe on the show. And if you like what you heard, take it a step further and give us a 5-star rating. Until next time, you connect with me on IG at Debbie Brown or my website, debbiebrown.com. Be blessed.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta
right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars for the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.